You're listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome podcast, bringing you the best of geek from week to week. Join your hosts, Dion and Quinny, and the occasional special guest as they talk movies, TV, gaming, toys, comics, and everything in between.
Welcome to the Running Man.
Survivor, the world's deadliest game show.
Walk away with $1 billion.
That's actually not true.
No one has ever survived.
We know a way to beat it, but we have to work together.
The biggest underdog win in game show history.
Okay, you ready?
It's gonna work.
I can't just let you win this game.
I need weapons and a disguise.
Holy shit.
Is that C4?
BFE. Big fucking explosion.
I'm gonna burn this building down.
That's the spirit.
Yes, hello and welcome to the Periodic Table of Awesome. Yay!
Yay! Friday, Tuesday.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't have the...
Don't confuse me.
I don't have the chutzpah to do the introductions like the people on The Running Man, and I don't want to be on a game show like that. That's why I'm just going to leave it to understand that we're here. It's Tuesday night, and tonight we're doing Richard Bachman Overdrive. Yes, that's right. It's Bachman time.
Yeah.
We're gonna
swear to me, I'm Bachman.
Yeah. Exactly.
Don't even care to understand the reference.
You will any second now because we are two men of an age who will explain shit to you.
Richard Bachman is one of the most influential and prolific short story to movie writers of our lifetime. And then, you know, like he did a lot of that and then he changed his name and went into horror and did bullshit. Fine. And that was mediocrely successful when he became Stephen King. But Richard Bachman did all of this stuff. Yes, I know, Jill. I don't know how you missed this. Richard Bachman is the pen name of Stephen King before he became Stephen King.
No, he was Stephen King, and he was writing as Richard Bachman as a side gig.
I prefer it the other way around. It's Richard Bachman was the real one.
Dion's version of reality is based in excitement, enthusiasm, but not reality.
No, much like I asked ChatGPT to write my script for today. So it has just given you the wrong information.
Yeah, basically there was a series of books that came out written by this guy called Richard Bachman, and everyone's like, oh yeah, they're quite good. Bit dark, bit Are fucking they? Bleak. not entirely sure that we like it, but you know, whatever. And then I think the last one that he released, people went, hang the fuck on. That sounds an awful lot like Stephen fucking King.
Yeah. Oh.
And then he was like, oh yeah, no, that's I've just been writing as this other guy, so I could write a different style of books for a while.
I see.
Yeah.
And the two films that we are talking about tonight are both Bachman books.
We
got there eventually.
Stop. Oh, okay. Yeah. The reference actually does make sense.
Yes.
It does have a point.
It does have a
point. I know.
completely understand, Jill. I usually do not have any point. That's
very well known for not having a point.
But tonight I do.
Some people would say he's pointless.
Hey,
aww.
I'm not pointing at you. Shut up. But these are both. We were doing The Running Man, and then some people may not have run fast enough to see The Running Man. There was also another one, which is The Long Walk, which I had not had any experience of at all. I'd never read the book at school or had to, and I had no idea. Well, I knew the film was out, but I wasn't particularly interested. But I am a big fan of the 80s Running Man, the 1987 Running Man.
Right.
So,
okay.
And I've got to say, after watching both these films, still a big fan of the 1987 Running Man.
Right.
Yeah, there's your quick one. Done.
Yeah, I love it. Like already, you know, there have been people who you've commented to things to on the Facebook page and stuff like that, and they've already gone, oh, Dion didn't like it then.
Yeah.
Like, you are so transparent.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, they need to figure out the whys and wherefores, not the immediate, not the social reaction. You can't just have the social reaction and make decisions. You need to understand all of the ingredients that go into it.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. Yes, please.
Okay, right. Sorry, yes. And yes. So, yeah, I unlike Dion, am actually quite a big fan of The Long Walk. So the book, I don't know why, but I had a long conversation with a bunch of my other mates over the last few days about, like, our bizarre interest in Stephen King. Where are you all at with your Stephen King? I want to know.
I haven't read a book, but I've watched many of the television and the movie stuff.
Right. Okay. Well, do you have a particular favorite of that kind of the Stephen King-iverse?
I really enjoyed The Dead Zone. The Dead Zone's good.
Good call. 80s yeah. cut.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Dion, where are you at with Stephen King?
Stephen King.
Or Richard Bachman.
Great ideas. Somewhat absolutely terrible execution in some ways, because there's always something in a Stephen King book. Like, and I like Stephen King's dark ideas. Like he's never one known for a happy ending. It's usually got some turn of like everything's awful, but God, he throws some weird shit in there. And you know, I'm talking about It,
which I'm still loving. Still loving.
So said good ideas. Just some inexplicable scenes that go in there that you're like, what? Why? Why? And I'm not going to go into them. We're not talking about It. Done that before. I'm just sort of saying, but even in these ones, there is some things of like, huh, okay, interesting take, or, you know, that sort of thing. I always find it, you know, it's okay. Like, good ideas may be a bit juvenile sometimes or just poorly thought out.
But, yeah, I mean, there are certainly things that he's done in some of his books that you're like, oh, buddy, no, that's not aged well.
What was the one with the aliens?
Which one? There's the Tommyknockers.
Not the Tommyknockers. No, there was another one which was something. Skin, not the Skinwalkers.
Oh, there is Skinwalkers. Yeah, like, there is a book called Skinwalkers.
I'm trying. I'll look it up. There's
Dreamcatcher.
Dreamcatcher. That's the one.
Oh, see, Dreamcatcher is one of those ones that I remember seeing in the
not
cinema.
The Langoliers.
No. Oh, fuck, the Langoliers.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah. This is just bringing back, like, childhood trauma of, like, the horror movies that my parents watched.
I love the Langoliers because it's, like, the evil bowling balls that eat the past. What the fuck? Like, that's one of those synopsises that you're like, you're doing a lot of drugs, aren't you, Steve? I want some evil bowling balls that start eating the little bit of history just behind where you've just been.
Yes.
What are you on, man?
Meth, Quinny. He's on a lot of meth.
Sorry, The Shining.
The Shining. Ah, it's which like one of my favorite movies?
Did you
read a book? I watched Doctor Sleep as well.
I enjoyed
not
Doctor
as
Sleep.
Good as The Shining. I think The Shining was better.
It's an interesting one because Stephen King hated the Kubrick version of The Shining.
Oh.
But bizarrely, did you ever see the TV miniseries of it?
No.
It was done in the, I don't know, early 2000s, maybe something like that. And yeah, there's like, I don't know, I think it's four episodes long, but four like movie length episodes.
Mm-hmm.
He loves that. He's like, yeah, this is the best version of The Shining. And everyone's like, okay. You're Kubrick, man. And he's like, yeah, nah. But I mean, didn't do it for me.
So what we're discovering is Stephen King has no taste.
Correct.
Stephen King. Stephen King's really
even when
good.
It comes to his own writing.
Correct.
He's prolific and he is like he's completionist, so he will get the book in. Which has got there. And also, it's a lot of different ideas. And he also doesn't give a shit if you take it and do shit with it. Like, this is why he's a director's writer, I feel like, because eventually he's like, I have a vision for this. He's like, yeah, sure, whatever. Where's my check? You know, I'm busy grinding out the next one. I need more meth. he's not, I don't know if he's on meth. Who knows?
He was for a while.
Yeah, well, there you go. But yeah, yeah, can we specific, like we're going to go back to this specifically because the running man for this one is also directed by Edgar Wright.
Yes,
and it has been a fresh take on a older film, which has a little bit of kind of social. No, Quinny.
No, it's a fresh take on the original book. They like Edgar Wright has said that he wasn't particularly into the 87 movie. He wanted to go back and adapt the book more accurately because the 87 film in typical fucking fashion, goes off in its 1987 kind of way.
Yeah, but I mean, at some points I find that much higher.
Look, whether or not you agree with what he's done, he's attempting to do the book, not the remake of the film.
In order to try to get this one back on track and not divest into a whole Stephen King off, because that's what the chat.
I was going to ask you what your favorite serious Stephen King things are. Are you like a Green Mile, or are you Shawshank Redemption?
Shawshank's
a good movie though.
Are you going for the 90s The Strand or the updated The Stand? Sorry. Okay. Let's not
get started on that whole Dark Tower thing either.
I remember the name of my father. Anyway, Quinny, do you have any sort of synopsis for this Running Man?
The Running Man. Yes, yeah. I do. Do we have a musical thing that is going to accompany it? I'll take that as a yes. We can't hear it.
Yes,
but Dion's
can.
Pulling a face.
They can hear it. They know what's going on.
Okay.
In the near future, The Running Man is the top-rated show on television. A deadly competitive... A deadly competition where contestants must survive 30 days while being hunted by professional assassins. Desperate for money to save his sick daughter, Ben Richards is convinced by the show's ruthless producer to enter the game as a last resort. Ratings soon skyrocket as Ben's defiance, instincts, and grit turn him into the unexpected fan favorite, as well as a threat to the entire system. The Running Man, Sunday night on QNBC.
Sunday. I gotta wait for the music. Now that we're into it, we're almost to the run for the hills. Oh, sorry, run to the hills. Ready?
What accent is it? I have no fucking idea. It's shitty TV guy.
Yeah, it's dystopian futuristic game show.
And if it was proper dystopian futuristic, it probably should have been like, I'd buy that for $1 or something.
Yeah!
That's what we need.
Yeah.
I always thought that The Running Man should have been directed by Paul Verhoeven.
I would have been down for that, but like...
You know... Yeah, I think Paul Verhoeven would have fucking kicked the shit out of The Running Man with that real kind of ironic sense of humor.
There's something to be said, I got to say, about the 80s and the 90s kind of ability to skewer the whole idea that I think is kind of being a bit lost in this. And if I'm going to have one big critique about this Running Man, it is very safe. This doesn't feel like it's got a message. To me, whereas
I didn't believe a second of it.
Exactly.
Interesting.
You've got America's insert white guy here at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he's called Generican.
Generican.
Yeah. Hey. The only thing he can do in that film is flick a hood real quick or do a zip real quick.
Yep.
And I'm like, what is with the aggression?
Look, you know, Glenn Powell I haven't had a, like, he's done, occasionally he does an interesting thing and he's got a little bit of range going on, but he seems to be in this thing now. It's like, who's going to be the next? At the moment, this one was bland and I didn't expect to go in and watch an Edgar Wright film and come out of it going, oh, right.
Now, it was like he was trying to put the Edgar Wrightness into the film with his actions, and not
Edgar Wright or Glenn Powell.
Glenn Powell.
Oh right,
it was like he was trying to put the action in the film without Wright actually doing that kind of direction. If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't, because I also have to put my hand up to it. I haven't had a chance to watch this one, so this is the one that I am out of the loop on. Yeah, I've seen trailers and I've seen clips, but I haven't
actually.
That directorial, like, cinematographic style of, like, doing fast zoom pans and, like,
crash zooms.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Like, I felt like the actors were trying to compensate by putting that into their movement. I didn't really feel
and at time,
Edgar Wright
auteur
around about the film.
And you know, one of the things I like about Edgar Wright's stuff, it can be very kinetic. He can make boring things seem really interesting because of the way that he shoots it. But some of the stuff recently has been, you know, his use of music in this. There feels like there's just no use of music. It's all stunt, 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 but no real good kind of reasoning. And I feel like it's just this thing where I was expecting, okay, I want to have a different take on it. I want to see how we're going to go. Is it futurism? Is it not futurism? Like, where are we sort of sitting here? And the strange thing was, like, I super connected with the reasoning of the 87, like, film more than this one, which actually has a more believable story.
Okay, remind me, because it's been 30 years or whatever since the 87 one. Which, by the way, stars Arnold Schwarzenegger, in case you missed it, in case you missed that one.
And his face is on the new dollar in this film.
It's the governator, like now the presidentinator.
Yeah, I like you also understand that it does have Yaphet Kotto in it as well. So you can shut the fuck up, Quinny, if you forgot that. Yes.
I'm sorry. But what was the main difference? Like, what was Ben Richards in the 87 one as opposed to here?
Oh, like, I mean, in this one, it's just Ben Richards is poor and needs to get medication for his sick child, which is why he enters the stupid game show thing where people compete for a lot of money because they've got no other option in their life. Not like we'd ever get to that point in society.
That will never happen, Mr. Beast.
Never happened. Sorry. Yes. Never happened with the Beast games. And they wouldn't all be toxic people. No. No. In this one, he's like, the running man is still there, but he was a helicopter pilot that disobeyed orders and didn't fire on civilians and was then basically falsely set up to say that he did shoot civilians and they turned him into a mass murderer. And then put him on because the running man contestants are all kind of on death row or have been charged with crimes in the future. And one of the things is people want to see this blood sport because they want to watch people die. Remember, this is the 87 version. And you get chosen as one of your runners on that show and you win the prizes. And just however long they, if they last longer, you get more prizes as a person in the audience. Like, this is those sorts of little nods that people forget about. So, you know, I know that people are like, oh, The Running Man wasn't like the book. It's like, no, it's not like the book. It's actually a better sort of take on the book because the book is a bit more difficult to go with. But also the book is better because it has, you know, it's not sort of set in a arena. Anyway, there's pros and cons for both. I just feel like in the execution, I actually much prefer the 1987 one than I do the 2025 one.
Because, I mean, the one thing I remember about the 1987 one is that it had a real American Gladiators kind of vibe to it. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%.
The hunters were, like, supervillains. They were all costume-wearing kind of supervillains, and Chainsaw Guy had a chainsaw, and there was...
Yeah, you know, because that's what the thing was. And they were just playing a part. They weren't necessarily the greatest people. They were just playing a part. And, you know, there was a risk of death to them, but not really. But except when they started dying, I was like, oh, shit, right.
I feel like the 80s was the best at doing these kinds of movies. Like,
yeah.
I haven't seen Arnie's Running Man, but I think I want to. And I think I might probably even enjoy it more than Edgar Wright's one. Yeah. But stuff like, it just left my brain. Total Recall. Like,
that
was way better than the modern one that they did.
Yeah.
It's just that kind of weird, like, that dystopian, futuristic, nihilistic shit that the 80s just had such a touchstone on.
Well, I look at it and go... Sorry.
No, you go there.
I was just going to say, like, to agree with Jill and go, yes, one of the things I liked about the 80s dystopian future was everyone was still having an okay time.
Yeah.
Like, if there's one thing about dystopian 80s future, it isn't like everyone's fucked and there's this tiny bit of elite. It's like everyone's kind of getting on with their lives, but shit's bad. Like, still living in a fascist state, but I can still have tennis lessons and don't have to work all the time.
Whereas now is probably a lot closer to reality.
Now it's like, just Elysium.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, remember that? Yeah, that's a fucked up dystopian world.
Yeah. Elysium, which I thought was like a weird version of Battle Angel Alita. Same story.
Yeah.
Like the uber rich living up above the mm-hmm. poor living in the garbage. But yeah, like I got the feeling that this one was very much like, okay, we're trying to ground it in a what we understand of a modern dystopia.
Yeah.
You know, like because we're starting to live in one.
Mm-hmm.
And people are perhaps a little bit more aware of what an actual dystopia is like, perhaps, maybe. I don't know. I haven't seen it.
I just didn't feel like there was a wide enough gap between what they're showing as poor people and what they're showing as elite.
Right.
In this one. It just kind of felt like these guys don't feel poor. Like, I'm not trying to judge people's levels of poverty, but like to me it just didn't feel like they were in desperation.
Right.
Yeah. And in this one, you know, it's Killian in the 87 one is the host of the show and is beloved and is more of an awful figure because you know that he's manipulated. He's got one face for the camera and one face in the back. In this one, it just feels a little bit more like, oh, this is a producer in the shadows kind of thing. And then you've got like different levels.
I mean, there's also like that's a populace that is more aware of how movies and TV work. Like everybody knows that now that the guy hosting the show is not the guy running the show.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, also you want that, like they put him out there in the end eventually. And it's like, no, just have your one villain.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. There's too many bad guys in this. Like Common Domingo was fantastic. I love him.
Yeah.
Right. He was great.
Yeah.
The host. But then you also have like Lee Pace as well, who you don't even get to really see until the end. And I'm like, excuse me, you're wasting this beautiful man.
Exactly. And then when you do reveal him, he's not real beautiful. It's like, oh no, what are you doing? But then again, just go and watch Foundation, Jill. You'll see enough of Lee Pace. Trust me.
No, I'll just watch Pushing Daisies for the millionth time.
You'll see too much Lee Pace in Foundation.
There's a lot of little Lee Pace.
Yeah, I mean, in this one, like, you know, you have hunters, these people who are tracking him down, and everyone else is doing it too. Like, you can share it if you make a reporting. But at least in the 87 one, they were all they all had their own little thing. They were in their own little personalities. It's like wrestling. And they actually got wrestlers, Jill. So this maybe will get you into it.
All right, I'm watching that on the weekend.
Some of the people, like the hunters in the Running Man of that one, it's what's his name? Fucking from Predator and
Jesse Ventura.
Jesse Ventura.
I could be an astronaut.
Oh, I fucking hate the body. I hate Jesse Ventura.
Don't worry, he's not in it too much. But I mean, in this one, the hunters are there. They were supposed to have their own little quirks, but they weren't really that quirky. And the underground made more sense in the 87 one because this one just seemed a bit shit. And also, you can't just not use a lot of stuff. Like, it was really weird. There was Chekhov's actors and Chekhov's scenes and Chekhov's updates to these. Whereas watching all of these things going, oh, there's William H. Macy. He's going to be, moving on. Right. Oh, there's Michael Cera. moving on. Like, you know, this is kind of like,
wow.
Yeah. Okay. Right. And what do they kind of do? They sort of already managed to fridge the wife and child again. Like, it just seems to be like, here's the wife
and
child.
They didn't, but he thought that they were dead.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. But it's just that kind of thing. Well, I mean, not that they were like dead. It's just they were removed from a majority of the movie.
Fridged
like,
from the story.
Right. They're there at the start and then they get put into, you know, isolation while he's doing the Running Man. And then you don't see them until they come back to it at the end. And you're like, what the fuck?
Not to mention, this film had about three endings. And I'm like, can it just be over, please?
It's like Return of the King.
And again, I will people complained about the 1987 Running Man diverting from the book. And I will say yet again that this one diverts from the book.
Oh.
The ending is not the same.
Okay.
Yep.
Pritikanga says, in this one, it felt like there was an underground and a revolution, but the main character wanted nothing to do with it.
He wasn't really for the people. This dude was just out for himself. There wasn't any kind of like revolution happening at all. He was so periphery to it.
Like, you know, the comparisons are in the 87 one, they are trying, like the underground is trying to broadcast the truth, the unedited footage, the uncut stuff, because there is this nature of what is real and what is not. And it's edited things by the corporation that runs America, which is a great story.
I was going to say, that sounds remarkably familiar.
Yeah. And in this
current
movie,
day,
they kind of talk about it too. And like with the day and age of the current Sora annoyances of videos that are coming out.
Ugh.
I mean, even now we're in that reality. But in this one, it just kind of, yeah, you're right. Jill's just like, he's just out for himself. He just wants to get some new dollars.
This dude has like every opportunity to become a messiah for like all of the people that get pushed into doing the Running Man. And then at the end of it, it's just like, nah, this is my story and this is how it's going to go.
Yeah. And I have anger issues and I'm going to like medicate my sick child, but not get any mental health treatment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so Adsky's asking the question, is this a run to the cinemas or run from the cinemas?
I've got to
say. Well, we didn't run to the cinema and I think it was worth not running.
I can't recommend that people should go to it. If you're going to wait for streaming, I can't really say. It's there's nothing in it that I thought would make it a cinema grab.
It's definitely a, I've got nothing to watch on Friday night. I'll pop that on.
Sure.
Right.
I really respect it too, in the sense that it's going for some action stuff. Like there are some good stunts in there. Like no worries. There are some fun, stunting deaths, different things that you're kind of watching. And, I think they had to do a lot of kills. Like I think that was one of the big problems. I think I saw something Edgar Wright talking about it. He had to kill a lot of people, even in the backgrounds of stuff happening. So they had to shoot a lot of murder. But it didn't feel like it was, they're having a lot of fun with it. It felt like there was just a lot of lists to go through and they had to do that. And a lot of the, you know, secondary characters were unfortunately not utilized.
Yeah. Karina just asked, how was Glenn Powell's towel?
Glenn Powell's towel.
I got to say, I was so bored by this movie. I wasn't even looking at him anymore. I was in the phone and I'm like, nah. Nah. You don't actually. Was he in a towel in the movie?
Yes,
because
yes.
Powell, I was not paying attention. Yeah.
Powell in a towel had to crawl down the, like, take the rope out and slide down outside the hotel. Remember?
I had zoned out. I was so bored in this movie.
Wow. Okay, that's
didn't
a, that's
even
a
know that he
statement.
Got his shirt off, to be honest. Sorry.
Telling statement that you're bored enough that you didn't notice the attractive man.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. concerning. Disappointing.
Yeah. But it's look, on.
the thing that gets me about it is I love Edgar Wright shit. I think he is a director that I really enjoy. I thought Last Night in Soho was so-so.
Oh, I liked that one.
I mean, it was interesting, but it didn't necessarily have that real kinetic thing that he has been known
for. Like Baby Driver. That was just such a fucking good, like, it really car was. Movie and music. Yeah. Like,
yeah, and, like, his editing is fucking spectacular. And I have seen nothing in this to indicate that there is much of that on the show.
Yeah.
It felt very safe. Like there was no peril for a film about a man running away and trying to evade and escape death. It felt at no point imperiled, and that kind of came through as well, which is a bit sad. Mm. You know, I wanted the Running Man to be surprising, and in it was not surprising. It was just kind of a bit boring, which is unfortunate. Mm.
Do you have a numerical score for it?
I'll give it 70 for running up that hill. That's for me.
Jill?
Man. I'm just going to go down the middle, 50. Sorry. Ooh. Just going to fence it because I zoned out. I was bored.
Sure.
Look, you know what? That sounds like a pretty good definition of where things are at with that.
Yeah.
And
rewatch the Cornetto trilogy if you want.
Yeah.
Yeah,
if you have seen it, drop a number in the chat.
I mean, you know, like I give it 70 because it is entertaining, but it's just a bit, as Jill said, Friday night pizza movie.
I mean, even World's End was better than this one.
Ooh, big call. Big call. I mean, on the World's End.
Well, yeah. World's End is not a great trilogy ender, but it has moments of being fun.
Yeah, and so someone was talking about Michael Cera. Yeah, look, his cameo is good. That is a bit of fun. That's when the stuff starts to ramp up a little bit. But then it kind of, yeah, again, I didn't need to see it. It's a bit dull.
Right.
All right, anyone?
Next.
Okay, that's the Running Man. That's our first Richard Bachman. Now we'll get on to the second Richard Bachman, which I think Quinny has opinions of.
I do indeed.
All right, next trailer. Roll trailer. Roll clip.
I'm Ray Garrity. You can call me Ray.
Beam of Breeze.
Hank Olson's the name. Walking's my game.
Are you many not a belt like me? I'm the last of my kind.
We did the very first long walk years ago to inspire everyday people.
Smile, boys. You're on candid camera.
Man, you gotta not think about the things out of your control. Think about your plan.
Personally, I can't stop thinking about all that money.
You'll never find another like me. I'm the last of my kind.
Third warning.
Okay, just keep walking.
That's right.
Just keep walking.
Second warning.
It takes heavy sack to sign up for this contest. I'm not going to go through the whole rule book, but it boils down to this. If you fall below the speed of 3 miles per hour, you get your ticket. Walk until there's only one of you left. Who's ready to win?
Yeah, it took me a while to realize the truth of this. This is walk or die.
Warning. You'll walk as long as you can.
Warning.
But sometimes the body won't listen.
Warning.
For some, your heart will stop.
Warning.
For others, your brain.
Warning.
And the blood will flow suddenly.
Warning. Warning.
There's one winner.
Warning.
And no finish line.
Y'all got the sack to be a part of this?
You sad.
I was like,
sack.
I know that voice.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit like the Joker.
Oh, dear. Well, okay. So we thought we'd go on a slightly more enjoyable and upbeat tone for the second Richard Bachman. I don't know why they call it a Stephen King novel.
If you had shown this movie to me without telling me who wrote it, I could have told you it was a Stephen King book.
Yeah.
It's just
100%.
Very quintessential.
Yep. It is so Stephen King.
Based off and this dialogue in the first 10 minutes alone.
100%. 100%.
Yep. Stop, the thing is, people. I think it's interesting because, Dion, you're playing your hand so early. Like,
it was shit, Quinny.
It really wasn't, and was you are wrong.
The movie was bad.
Okay.
The movie was
Running Man was shit. I actually enjoyed this one.
Yeah. Sorry, Dion, you're on your own on this one.
Yep.
You're going to be walking your own long walk there, buddy.
I'll be on my own little island sitting on the side going, that movie's a piece of shit.
And you are more than welcome to, from the side of the road, hurl your insults as we walk on past.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
Did not enjoy. End of podcast. Right. All right, then. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next
time. I mean, he's running the show.
Well, yes, this is true. And you know what? I guess he can do that.
I feel a little bit like that guy, like, prove me wrong.
Yeah.
He's going to sit back in the chair and say,
he's a heap of shit. Prove me wrong.
A Long Tell Walk me. Is a shit movie, and I hated it. Prove me wrong.
I did go, though, just to be fair, I did go and look up the book version to see what changes had come. And I was like, again, fucking just do the book. Guys, just let the book do it. The book is doing an ending. Let the book do an ending. Like, you know, kind of. I felt that with both the updated Running Man and the Long Walk. Both films, totally different films, both shied away from the ending that was in both books.
Mm-hmm.
And in that means that they kind of missed the important message.
Okay.
That's what that's my more educated one, apart from this is shit, I didn't like it.
Prove me wrong.
Right.
Make me not like this movie then. What is the lesson that we missed from The Long Walk?
Yeah, I'm intrigued.
What the lesson that you missed? The lesson that I think is missing from The Long Walk is I feel like there is a very interesting metaphor that I got from it, which is the hamster on the wheel will walk itself to death when presented with no other option of escape. So that's the metaphor I got about it. And I felt that was quite well done in the book because I didn't get it until so I watched the movie and then kind of went, and then looked at the recap of the book and was like, I get that now. And the same thing for the Running Man in the book, I feel like the sacrifices that you make when you're not given any good way out because the game is rigged against you is to say, stop playing the game. So I think in both of these films, I got you're playing a game that is rigged against you and that's not good. So you need to figure out a way of not playing the game. And I feel like both of those messages existed in the works. And I'm not sure that either of those messages came out of both of these films totally separately.
Okay.
So, prove me wrong, kids.
The book of The Long Walk is very specifically written as a response to the Vietnam War.
Okay.
It was written with the idea in mind that all we were doing as a society was sending our young men, specifically men in that particular time, to walk into gunfire. Like, there was no point to it. It was completely a waste of potential. And all King wanted to do was express that there are people. These are people. They're not numbers on a screen or whatever. These are people's children. They've all got backgrounds. They've all got experiences. And in the face of something completely horrific, they debase themselves, they shit themselves, they, like, their bodies give out, their whole world is destroyed by a system that is currently being run by a military-industrial complex, and it doesn't care. It's just sending kids to the meat grinder. And mm-hmm. I personally think the film still does that pretty fucking well.
I mean, the metaphor is very strong, but I suppose where Dion is saying that, like, the ending is like, stop playing the game. The movie does kind of lend itself towards, well, I've played the game and these are the shitty prizes that I won.
Yeah. And yeah, like the book's ending is so much more ambiguous. Like, there is, you know, there is so much,
and it's
less.
That Stephen King ambiguous ending that he always does so that you can just fill in your own details. It's so fucking lazy of him.
I mean, it's like it's like the end of The Mist, you know, where like they finally they get to the car and they just drive out into the mist, and you're like, odds are they're about to be eaten by a giant fucking monster or something like that.
Yeah.
That's fucking awful. Then in the film, they added in the bit that actually made it worse.
Yeah.
And I won't mention it in case people haven't seen it, but like the ending of the fucking Mist is bleaker than the book.
And that's good. See, that's a good version of the Mist, doubling down. I forgot about the Mist. Thanks for that one.
No. This one, I think there is an argument that this ending is bleaker than the ending of the book.
Yeah.
And I think there's a thing where if you're adapting a film, a story that is 30 years old, you probably may want to choose a different ending or a different thing.
Yeah,
because,
or like maybe have a point of view and try to tell a story instead of just like, oh, I've got all of this money, I'm going to make a movie, I'll just make this book, and then not have a perspective. Like, come on.
Yeah, and I thought that this had a different perspective. I was not bored. That's the thing. Like, for a movie that's about people walking at 3 miles an hour, which ain't that fast, that's an interesting thing that was changed from the book to the film. In the book, it's 4 miles an hour. And, the director was like, I tried walking at 4 miles an hour for a while.
That's a
fucking fast clip, and people are not getting to 280 miles at that speed for that long.
500 miles in the sort of thing. Speaking of that, Quinny, do you have a synopsis? Did we get to synopsis about what this is all about? No.
Sorry.
We just watched that and then launched straight into why it was terrible, but also I want to come back to your Vietnam War allegory.
Okay. Have we got music?
Yes, you do.
Okay. All right, scrubs. The Long Walk is a dystopian story about 100 boys competing in a brutal televised walking contest in an alternate America where they must maintain a pace of at least three to 4 miles an hour or risk getting shot after three warnings. The event is designed to inspire patriotism and productivity. It has no finish line, and it continues only until one walker is left. And that winner gets a prize and of their only wish of their heart's desire. Sack up, boys. Keep walking. And once again, Dion can hear the music.
It's 500 miles he's playing.
Yeah.
No, you know, if you couldn't get that from the mime I was doing and the fact that I told you before the show.
Yeah, I know that. But like, I know what you're doing. I just can't hear it. So you just look like you're going.
Yeah, I know. It's called the magic.
Oh, sorry. I'm pulling back the curtain.
It's the magic of podcasting, Quinny.
Sorry.
Here's the thing. Knowing that it was a Stephen King book, whoever have you, I was expecting a supernatural ending. Oh. I have to tell you that when they said you get a wish, I was like, "Oh, we're getting magic."
Yeah. this is what happens at the end of the Long Walk. You stand.
I'm like, at the end of the Long Walk, you get a wish, and I'm like, okay, if we can wish for anything, and then I'm thinking this is like some genie shit, like we're getting like a magical wish.
It turns out
I was a little underwhelmed.
Yeah. Right.
The major is actually the bad man from the Dark Tower. Mm. There you go.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, the Randall Flagg or whoever.
Yeah.
The Man in Black.
It's interesting. Some of my ideas have softened, Quinny, after you've had the explanation that this is a distinct Vietnam War, like a direct piss take of the Vietnam War. I understand that better now.
Yeah. Like, and you look at the characters, and each of them is representing, and it explains why there's the ratio of the kind of people that there are. Like, you know, you've got one Native American character there who's got their perspective on it. You've got the one Asian character who, you know, has some interesting stuff about their character, and probably a higher ratio of African Americans, you also say, okay, well, there's that saying something about the kind of people that mostly were in the army.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it makes a lot more sense. And I also like that. Yeah, the military-industrial complex is the major. You know, 100%. It's the government just sort of saying, you'll do this and you will get richly rewarded. And to be completely honest, no, they were not richly rewarded. If they made it home, they were just damaged for the rest of their lives. They were broken people. So, yeah,
the horror is actually televised. Like, you know, throughout the whole thing, there are cameras on all of the tanks. Yep. So, like, this is sort of like the opposite to The Running Man, in that in this one we never see what the people at home see, but this is from the inside of the thing out, which I find fascinating.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, look,
Hunger Games vibe about it.
Yeah,
I was going to go there. So. Yes, to the Hunger Games, but I like that one a little bit more because you got to understand that it was something against the people that are involved in this one. It's just this arbitrary thing. I wanted to know why. Why was there this stupid long walk? What's happened to the rest of them? Why does the military look absolutely terrible? You know, they don't look like they're in control of anything. It looks like America has suddenly become the poorest nation on earth. Yet they still have television to everyone. They can broadcast
this
stuff.
And, like, I mean, it's mentioned, throughout that, like, this is in a dystopian version of America where there is no money. Like,
yeah.
So,
so like America in 6 months.
Yeah, basically.
When the AI bubble bursts and cryptocurrency destroys itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There is no money, and the only thing that is still making money is the military. And sure. How do we keep our populace in line? You give them an annual thing that shows them a blood sport, but also supposedly gives them hope. It's bread and circuses. It's all that shit.
It is. Like, at least I get the Running Man. You could have a chance to win, like, money and prizes. In this one, it's just like, you can watch someone die, and that will inspire you through their suffering.
Well, and
but it's
that one
also
person
about
wins.
The camaraderie of the journey as well. It's like it's the friendship that they made along the way, but also like the heartbreak of losing these people. And it's like that's what war does. Like you're put together in an infantry, and you have to become a brotherhood, and then you inevitably die.
Yeah,
it's just the cruelty of war. That's the whole allegory.
Yeah.
There'll
be infighting, and there'll be people who are cruel. There'll be people who, you know, think that they're better than everybody else. They'll, you know, poor fucker who shits himself.
Hey, a lot of people shat themselves on this. At least it gave a good explanation. I like that they didn't shy away from a lot of that stuff. You know, there was that bit of reality about it. And I didn't mind the dawning realization of all of them. He started off going, yeah, this is going to be fine. We're just going to walk, until it started to become a lot too real for people.
And that guy walking on a fucking broken foot for the longest time.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And like, also, all of the killing was done in a way that was not gratuitous, but at the same time, not shying away from the fact that this is, you know, heads being blown out. This is...
Yeah.
Like the first kill, you're like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
Wow.
But then they started to get a little bit like macabre about it, and they weren't doing headshots. They were doing gut shots so that these people would like bleed out and in agony. Like,
as a warning that do not try and go against the system.
Mm. Yeah.
And you're like, oh, Jesus Christ.
You know, I do feel like the filmmakers took a bit of that influence of, you know, the Time Life kind of shots of Vietnam. That we got, there's the famous execution scene and the famous girl running down the road with napalm. All of that kind of came through in this film a little bit. I was a bit sort of weirded out by the execution of it, because I have to admit, I didn't like any of the characters.
Oh.
Okay.
I didn't get along with any of them.
Okay.
Because I always felt like the ones that were like nice and supportive were going to do something terrible. And then the terrible ones were just already terrible. So I didn't really want to root for them. And as we got to learn more about them over the long walk, I was actually more interested in the rest of the people around them, and I never got any satisfaction of finding out what was going on. Like the soldiers who were doing it, they just seemed to be completely fine with it. The major is a mysterious figure that has absolutely no explanation or seems to care and has one character note. Must have been a great...
Yeah, I think that's the faceless nature of the machinations of the military.
Yeah, I understand it though. Like as a conceit, as a film to do, it's a pretty good thing. It keeps you in the boundary. You've got to be on that one road. It's a marathon.
Yep.
It's hard to make it interesting, but I feel like they did quite well.
Like there's the sequence where they like when they come to a hill, and you're like, oh Jesus Christ, that's fucking harsh.
And you got to up your pace.
You've got to maintain a pace going up a hill, which is not easy. Yeah,
and then overnight and letting people sleep on you.
Yeah, yeah.
Wild. I was like, oh shit, right.
Yeah, like I liked the way that it explored the ideas that it was trying to talk about, and I thought it felt really visceral and you know the. The simplest things that you're like, oh God, yeah, right. Okay. That'd be fucking awful if you couldn't stop.
To do anything, like even tying a shoe.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh shit. My shoes I've literally worn the soles off my shoes. Fuck. What do I do?
Keep walking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Chafing.
As I said,
oh God.
No one had to deal with any of that. What are you talking about? I did like that they're allowed to have water whenever they wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a nice little thing. It's like, at least they'll keep them hydrated. But yeah. I have to admit, after your discussions and talking about these things, my opinion of the movie has softened. Maybe it's not shit. If you look at it through the viewfinder of this is a direct allegory to the Vietnam War and the stupidity of it, I understand it a little better now. I still feel like they copped out at the end and they should have done the book ending, which would have been ambiguous. Yes, Julie, it would have been ambiguous, but I feel
should
like
have had
it,
a magic wish at the end.
Yeah, magic wish at the end. Yep.
Yeah. I could see myself watching this movie 10 times and studying it for English and having to write an essay. That's the level of this film.
Hating it so much.
I think, well, you know, that's okay. Yeah.
But yeah, I was impressed that they accurately did the book as well as they did, and it felt the way that I felt like it should. Like, it felt painful and long and tedious, but at the same time, like, I was never bored. Which is, you know, a pretty good trick for a film that's about a bunch of dudes walking.
Yeah.
There's something that also occurred to me. I was like, because it took me ages to work out what the whole thing of, like, there's a character in there who, the tall kid whose name I can't remember, Stebbing?
Oh, the one that gets sick at the end?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, his whole thing. And I was like, when we're talking about the allegory of the Vietnam War, what is his thing? And suddenly I realized his whole thing is about the children that all the GIs sired in Vietnam. Like, you know, that all of these Americans were over there, you know, hooking up with Vietnamese women and stuff like that, and leaving behind this generation of kids to be either, you know, lost, hated by their other people. Like, that's what that's about. I was like, oh, fuck, okay, right.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the thing. If you know the allegory, it's all very interesting. If you don't, it's a movie about a bunch of people walking.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to know the director of this is going on to do the next Hunger Games.
Oh, so,
yeah. I was just double checking on that. Yeah, they did. They worked on their videographer for the Hunger Games, Catching Fire, Mockingjay, and did Hunger Games, A Ballad of Songs and Snakes, and doing the next one. So it's just kind of like, oh, okay, cool. So you're in your lane.
The Hunger Games vibe about it.
There you go.
It's like the color palettes and the fashions and the production and stuff was very districty.
Yeah. Yeah. Not the Catching Fire part, not the big exciting
District 12. It was District 12 they were walking through.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It cost 20.
That was weird, like, because it was such a weird version of America where it's like, yep, here's a crucified crow, here's some burning cars.
Yeah.
Like, wait, what the fuck is going wrong with America?
The budget is $20 million, and I'm like, come on, mate, I could have done it for four. Yeah.
They had to hire those tanks. It was the hiring of the tanks.
Yes.
That's what did it.
Yeah.
Oh, they weren't even really tanks. They were just, like, armored vehicles. Jesus.
They were. Like, they were tanky enough for that one kid.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Basically just big cars. It's okay. I guess Karina had did a PR marketing thing for this where she's reading about it going, they did where setting up a treadmill in the cinema that you had to walk for the whole thing while watching it. And I was like, that's diabolical. And I love that.
Yep.
That would have given extra grit.
Imagining
but
standing
if you were walking at the 3 miles, it'd be easy. But if you were walking at it 4 miles, it would be...
I hope they actually like. I hope they logged straight into it though, and just went as soon as you dropped below, they pulled you out of the cinema and you weren't allowed to watch it. I would have been like,
"Wow,
oh, now for that,
you dedicated."
Know. Yeah, exactly. exactly. Yeah. Okay. So, is there a numerical rating? Do you think for the Long Walk?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm definitely giving it a higher rating than The Running Man. I'm probably going to go up to like 80. I enjoyed it. Yeah, I thought the cinematography was quite nice. I really liked the color grading on it and just the period look.
And the characters, you liked the characters, you thought it was well done.
I did enjoy the characters,
even though they had terrible dialogue and none of them were likable.
It was Stephen King dialogue.
Yeah, it was 100%. 100% Stephen King dialogue. Oh, dear. Yeah.
Your numbers.
Yeah, I have to admit, you guys have convinced me that it's going to go up. So it's a solid 50 for me. It was very low.
Wow.
In this. Did not. Maybe it was just the time I was watching it. Maybe I was just tired. Who knows?
Because when I came into work on Monday and you're just like, oh, I was like, oh, wow, you really.
No, yes. Anyway, give it a 50.
Fair enough. Okay, for me, I'm much more where Jill's at. Like, I really enjoyed it and I enjoyed the characters. I thought it was interesting, like, the Ray Garrity, your lead character, was so completely generic. But
yeah. Yeah, he's like, an everyman guy.
He was just an absolutely perfect everyman, like, American kid, which is interesting because then in The Running Man, you've got Generican.
Do you know who the actor was?
For Garrity?
Yeah, Cooper Hoffman, Philip Seymour Hoffman's son.
I could see that now.
Yeah,
I didn't put two and two together, but yeah, I can totally fucking see that.
Yeah.
So yeah, for me, like, I'm going to go 88. I really enjoyed it. I was emotionally invested and, you know, by the end of it, I was like, fucking hell. And it reminded me of reading the book and being like, this is hard. This is a hard fucking graft.
Hey, that's good.
So there you go.
Everyone go watch it and then write an essay.
We're going to be watching this part again next week.
Yeah, and argue with me in the comments about why I'm still wrong.
I'm glad we could pull you up from wherever the fuck you were before you hit
it. It was very,
Jesus,
very bad.
Christ.
Yeah, yeah. I felt terrible about it.
We lifted him up and we carried him with us, Quinny.
Because sometimes when you can't walk, we carry you.
Leon had shat himself and broken his ankles, but we carried him.
Just leave me. I had to shoot myself to death over here. All right. I'm about ready to put this one away for good. What are we doing next week? of course we are. We're going to do the Wicked. Oh dear!
Get your
leave your brooms out or your witch's hats out. Paint yourself green.
If you leave your witch's hats, I'll drive around.
I am going on Friday night. Nice. I have booked gold class. Oof. I'm gonna go and fucking enjoy this. And I must wear all waterproof makeup, and I must take a box of tissues
because
I'm gonna fucking lose it. I watched the Wicked One Wonderful Night thing that they put on.
Mm.
They had done a recording of For Good, and I fucking cried watching that. So,
right,
this movie, I'm gonna be a mess.
I'm looking forward to it because I don't know. I've seen Wicked twice in the theater, but I don't know. I still can't really remember the rest of it, like, you know, I can't remember the second half as well as the first half.
Yeah.
And I am slightly concerned. I'm like, oh, first half is real strong. Is there as much in the second half for you to latch onto?
A point I'm worried about is Casper in the chat has just reminded that there is a popcorn bucket for Wicked, and now I'm scared.
There's many popcorn buckets. You actually have to pre-order them through Village Cinemas.
I don't want to know what they look like. I'm just scared already.
It was the Wizard's Hot Air Balloon, which was really fucking cute.
That's cool.
And then there was just a really nice, like, hexagonal tin that had, like, pictures on the side. I don't know if I'm remembering correctly if there was a witch's hat.
But I feel like there has to have been, surely.
But the balloons, popcorn.
Someone's gonna fuck
it. Which hat is going to fuck people, I think.
Yes, Tari, you're right. Like most musicals, the second half are probably not as strong as the first half in a lot of cases. Like, they don't necessarily have the big...
I mean, when your song that takes you to interval is Defying Gravity, like, where do you go from there?
Exactly. That's my concern. It's like, oh, you kind of hit the fucking high point. Where do we go from here?
Good is such a good song, though. Like, I'm going to be destroyed.
Yeah.
And there's two new songs written for the second movie as well. So it'll be exciting to hear those. I hope they're good.
Nice. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I don't know when the fuck I'm going to get to see it, but I'm marking out some time because
I'm devo that fucking Universal didn't send me a ticket to go and watch it. I'm like, pretty sure they did last year.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Universal, if anybody's watching, it's been a bit light on the emails this month.
Snaps out.
Jill, you know you catch more flies with honey?
That's hey, how Universal. I got to the Barbie premiere, babe. Yeah.
kick rocks.
I really had to put the boot in to get to go to that.
Go kick rock with open-toed shoes. Is that the
Yeah, well, I did a fucking freebie hosting gig for them. And I'm like, of course you're going to send me to fucking Barbie. Excuse me.
That's next week. We've got to go because we've got...
got more ultimatums.
Got more ultimatums. Just got more ultimatums to email people. thank you for everyone in the chat that you've done there joining in this week.
Yeah, thank you, everybody.
There's a twofer there we're doing.
Twice
as much. We were only going to do one, but now we're two.
As always, Casper, thank you for all of your subs. You are the submachine gun.
Oh, yes.
I will say, wherever you can, if you can, we do love your support. We also love your financial support because occasionally we do have bills to pay. And if you can think of any way that you want to help us, we will always take your help.
Sure. We have a Ko-fi donation button.
We do. And many of you have been very generous in the past, and we very much appreciate it.
Domain hosting costs nothing.
Yeah. It does. It really does.
We love it. Thanks, Karina. Yeah, we were going to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it. I don't think we were spoiling tonight. We gave you. So you can make up your own mind.
Okay, guys.
No one wants the weekend!
Okay, cool.
Right. Thanks, everybody.
Good all right, night. We're okay, thanks. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome podcast. If you have questions, please email info@theperiodictableofawesome.com. Find us on our website, www.theperiodictableofawesome.com, where there's links to our iTunes, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. Until next time, stay awesome.